I usually remind my audience that what's, thank you, Elizabeth, what's critical about planning and paying for long-term care, which is our subject here today, we need advanced directives, hopefully in place, that is, powers of attorney, healthcare proxies, and living wills. Apparently, everyone is cued into healthcare proxies. Healthcare proxies are really powers of attorney for healthcare decision making. What's a power of attorney? It gives someone, I am the principal party, I have the option of naming anyone of a number of people, friends or relatives, professionals, to represent me for financial planning. To represent me for paying the bills, collecting the dividends, if there are dividends to collect, etc. An agent who I appoint can buy my house for me and represent me at the purchase of my house, and at the same time represent me at the sale of my house. So keep in mind, if you don't have powers of attorney in place, do get them. Planning and paying for long-term care. What's long-term care? Well, everyone in this room knows what long-term care is. Long-term care is nursing home, home care, daycare, assisted living. What does long-term care really mean? What does home care, nursing home, etc. all mean? What does long-term care really all mean? It means it costs a lot of money. How much money? Nursing homes are running about $500-$600 a day. That's something, I can't do the arithmetic each time I do it. It's like $180,000 a year. For nursing home care, there's no price control, no price limit. You go into that facility and they can raise the rent, so to speak, giving you 30 or 60 days. No doubt about it, long-term care is expensive. If I need to get someone to take care of my mother during, who's 85, 95, who's frail and needs round-the-clock care, that's an easy $200 a day. That's $72,000 a year for home care. Many people benefit very well by going to a daycare program. They run about $150 a day. And finally, people have a choice of an assisted living facility. What is an assisted living facility? It really is basically a hotel with meals. And what's important to know about most assisted living facilities, there is no assistance unless you pay extra. So, no doubt about it, long-term care is expensive. How do you pay for it? There are roughly only four ways that I know of to pay for long-term care. One, you can pay for it out of your pocket, but how many of us can afford to pay on an open-ended basis for instance, nursing home at $180,000 a year? Maybe you can pay for 1 year, maybe you can pay for 2 years, but in reality, most of us couldn't afford it in the first place, or we'd have to spend down and then apply for alternative sources of support. The private paying privately for home care, paying privately for daycare, assisted living, home care, all of those charges are tax deductible. To whom? To me, if I'm paying for my mother's care, to my mother, if she's paying for it herself. Tax deductibility. Of course, if it's a tax deductible medical expense, it has to be on the up and whatever the word, up. What is it, Elizabeth?
Which one?
We have to be sure we file normal taxes for our employee, etc. I'm talking about home care attendance. we have to pay that person Social Security, medical coverage.
Above board.
Above board, thank you very much. I told you I haven't been around these precincts for a while. So, the important thing about private pay, yes, God bless you if you have the money to pay it, but most of us don't. Where else can we go? Well, we can look to long-term care insurance. What's the problem with long-term care insurance? Well, those people who need it most no longer qualify. If I have or my mother has Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, any form of long-term care, dementia, or other illnesses, her opportunity to buy into long-term care insurance is precluded, if not very limited. What else is the problem with long-term care insurance? It's too expensive. Most of us can't afford it. And it's usually inadequate. My mother has bought $100 a day medical long-term care insurance. Well, when she knocks on the door of the nursing home and she hears it's $600 a day, that $100 or even $200 that she bought is not going to help her much at the nursing home door. It may help her to pay for home care, but it's not going to pay much of the long-term care.
I just want to add, because this is what my husband subscribed, the conditions to benefit at $100 a day, which for me is $80 a day, basically he has to be dead. You know, I mean, really, he has to be incontinent, he has to be unable to get out of his chair, he has to do all kind of things that really, and he's 90 years old, you know, and he's been paying for thousands of years, $105 a month. And
that's
a month.
$1,200 a year.
Exactly. So actually, it was a question I wanted to raise with you, because I think I should really get rid of it. Because I don't think he will ever, he has Alzheimer's, I mean, he has dementia, I mean, there's no question about that, but he's still, far from being, he's not incontinent at all, he's very strong. I mean, I think he's going to live to 105 as well, you know. But so that's what I want you to know about long-term care. And he has been paying for years and years and years. He's 90 years old now, you know, and we're still paying $105. So I think
it probably pays to continue.
That's what they say.
He's in high risk.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Almost invariably, yeah. He's going to utilize. It's not going to help very much.
No, but it's still $80 a day,
yes.
So it's still, so you
better see, something.
That's what they say when I call. But for anybody, if you want to subscribe, I mean, you know, if you're taking care of someone younger.
But if you had bought insurance, long-term care insurance that paid $300 a day, that would, of course, quite a bit of money.
Yeah, my mm-hmm. idea.
You know,
yeah.
Quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
Let me go on.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I just wanted to
thank you.
A little bit of salt.
So we've covered private pay, we've covered long-term care. What else? Where else can we go? Well, we can go to the Medicare program. But the problem with Medicare is it is really not chronic care insurance. Medicare is not long-term care insurance. Medicare is acute health insurance, and we're looking for chronic care insurance. We're looking for support with the activities of daily living. We need help getting from my bed to my wheelchair to the bathroom to bathing, showering, eating, dressing. We're needy of chronic care. There is no chronic care in the Medicare program. But beyond that, there's a great disparity between chronic care as it's provided and Medicare or acute care. How does it play out in real life? Let's assume I need to have, let me put it this way. I have good news for everyone in this room. I have liver cancer, and Medicare is going to spend perhaps hundreds of thousands of dollars on my liver cancer. That's the good news. I'm going to get a room facing Central Park in Mount Sinai. I'm going to have this beautiful view of the lake. I'm going to have surgery, perhaps. I'm going to get a semi-private room. I'm going to get a semi-private room. I'm going to have my meals. I'm going to have my radiation, my chemotherapy, and maybe a new liver. And following that surgery, I'll be entitled to so many days in a skilled nursing facility, where they will monitor my wounds and get me so much better that I can move into home care, which Medicare will cover too. So the good news is I have liver cancer, and Medicare will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on my cancer. What's the bad news? The bad news is I have Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, CPOD, what else could I possibly have? I need assistance with the activities of daily living. Not a penny will come out of the Medicare program. Hundreds of thousands of dollars for my new liver, not a penny for my Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and so forth. How come? Why do we have this dichotomy? Back in 1966, when Congress created the Medicare program, no one had ever heard of Alzheimer's. Yes, there was Lou Gehrig's disease, Parkinson's, etc., but we did not have the kind of population we have today, an Alzheimer's patient. But we're all living longer, and the incidences of long-term care are more upfront. So we see it now, and the law is not going to change readily. So, private pay, long-term care insurance, Medicare, just that little bit of long-term care under Medicare. Where do we go? We're lucky. In New York, I'm only talking about New York State, not talking about Connecticut, I'm not talking about New Jersey, just New York. Of course, Medicaid varies from state to state. Doesn't vary from state to state when we're talking about Medicare, but it does vary from state to state when we're talking about Medicaid. Well, what's Medicaid? Well, Medicaid is both an acute care health insurance company, or not a company, but a provider. Medicaid will provide acute care coverage. That is, Medicaid will pay for what's covered by Medicare, hospital doctors, if I don't have it through the Medicare program. But for our purposes today, Medicaid will also provide chronic care. Medicaid will pay for a nursing home, even at $500-$600 a day. Medicaid will provide round-the-clock home care, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, if the person qualifies. Medicaid will pay for,
daycare,
durable medical equipment, thank you, and some assisted living. But wait a second, I thought that Medicaid is a program for middle class, for poor people, and I'm talking here today about Medicaid being coverage for middle class people. I don't know how you might define middle class in New York these days, but let's assume Medicaid was dedicated and is dedicated to poor people, not to middle class people. Do we all agree Medicaid is for poor people? Okay, you're wrong. You're wrong. Medicaid is not only for poor people. Medicaid, particularly that portion of it that covers long-term care, is available to middle-class people.
So you're saying that we can get a middle-class family person can get Medicaid specifically for chronic care?
That's right.
How do we qualify? Mm-hmm. How do you qualify?
How do you qualify? Well, that's the whole trick.
Yes. I'm ready.
You're ready, willing, and able. But you have to remember what you have to remember. Ah, you can be middle class and still qualify for this poverty program. It has evolved in New York State as middle class insurance for middle class. The best way I can demonstrate this for you is to give you some case histories. Usually, almost every day, every other day, I get a call from a daughter. It's usually the daughter who calls. Mother is being discharged from the hospital. She's okay, but she's going to need round-the-clock care for the rest of her life. It's going to cost, for simplicity purposes, $100 a day. It would be more likely to be $200 a day. It's going to be $100 a day or $3,000 a month. Daughter says to me, Mr. Petrov, they told me at the hospital discharge planning office if my mother's assets and income were less than the Medicaid limits, she would be eligible for Medicaid home care, daycare, assisted living, pharmaceuticals, durable medical equipment. She could be eligible if she were poor. But my mother has too much income, too much savings to qualify. Nevertheless, Mr. Petrov, is there some way you can stretch my mother's dollars? She has too much in income, she's been told, and she has too much in savings to qualify for Medicaid. Nevertheless, Mr. Petrov, can you stretch my mother's dollars? So I say to her, yes, we may be able to. Tell me what your mother's situation is. She says, well, my mother has $1,000 a month in income and $1,000 a month in rent. $1,000 in income, Social Security, and pension, and $1,000 a month in rent. How does your mother manage living on $1,000 a month? Oh, daughter says, my mother has $60,000 in savings. She has $60,000 in savings, and she's using the $60,000 in savings to pay her other bills, her food, her clothing, etc., etc., etc. How can she manage to get into the Medicaid system if she has too much in savings, so they tell her, and too much in income? She is $1,000 in income and, what did I say, $60,000 in savings. I said, and I will tell her, no problem. We can make your mother eligible. She says, but how? I went down to the social services department in the hospital, and they tell me that to be eligible for Medicaid, my mother can't have more than $14,850 in savings, and she has $60,000 in savings, and she can't have more than $850 a month in income. And my mother has
a thousand.
Thank you. How can we qualify? I say, we can impoverish your mother. How can we do this? We can take her $1,000, let's take her $60,000. She will take her $60,000. Mother will give her excess savings. Her excess savings being the difference between $60,000 and $14,850. Actually, she'll do more than that. She can prepay for her funeral, so she can leave $5,000 for funeral and $14,850 for her allowed savings and qualify her, at least resource-wise, for Medicaid. home care, daycare, assisted living, etc. But what about her income? Mother's income is $1,000 a month. Medicaid says she can only have $850. Medicaid says she can only have $850. Medicaid doesn't care what her food bill is, what her rent is. Medicaid says my client can only have, Mary can only have $850 in income. In this instance, in scenario number one, Mary is going to give her excess income, $850 a month, into the $150 a month. The difference between $1,000 versus $850. She's going to give in $150 into the Medicaid program, but what is she going to get out of it? Well, she's going to get what we talked about. She's going to get home care, maybe as much as 24/7. She's going to get pharmaceuticals that Medicare doesn't cover. She's going to get durable medical equipment, etc. She's going to be fully qualified for community Medicaid and be paying out of pocket $150 a month. She's getting, maybe in her instance, a package worth $5,000 a month, $3,000 for home care, $150 for daycare, etc. A package worth $5,000 a month for how much money?
$150. Yeah, but it's because she's not making any money. But what if you're making $10,000 a month? So then
we have an answer to that, okay. But you're jumping. Believe it or not, we actually, as preposterous as it might sound, yeah. We have an answer. The point is, the law or the rule is, there is no penalty for transferring assets to become eligible for non-institutional
Medicaid. But what if you transfer your asset to your spouse? Does that count?
That does not count. There's no penalty for transferring to your son, your daughter.
That's it. So you would have to transfer to our son then.
Somebody.
Yeah,
or to a trust.
Not a spouse.
It could be a spouse as well.
Yeah?
Yes. Mary, if she had a husband, could impoverish herself by transferring her assets.
To her husband, really?
Yes.
Yeah, but what about if they live together?
Yeah. That's okay.
That's okay.
And you have to figure out who pays the rent, etc. Basically, she can only use whatever money she has for herself.
Okay.
So when you're a married couple, does the husband's income count?
No.
It doesn't. So it's just.
No.
No. That's interesting.
And income can mean Social Security payment and pension?
And she's going to get a check each month. She's going to continue to get that $1,000 a month check, and she's going to give to Medicaid $150.
But what about the spouse?
The spouse, if we have a spouse, the spouse is off the table. Mm-hmm. The spouse is not liable. He can have hundreds of thousands of dollars. He can have tens of thousands of dollars of income. However, if he's affluent, it's very possible that Medicaid will come after him at some point for a contribution to her care.
So how does that $150 become not considered income?
It is income.
It's excess income. Like the $60,000. You minus the 60, when we're talking about resources, you have 60,000 in savings. She can't have more than $14,850 plus a funeral.
Give that away.
So she's got to give away, she's got to give away to someone the difference between 20,000 and 60,000.
Right, but I'm talking about that income, savings aside, I'm talking about the income that was calculated or that Medicaid is looking at for eligibility.
Yes, Medicaid.
So that income is $1,000.
The income is $1,000, but Medicaid says, madam, you can only have $850.
You can only have $850, but if you give me $150, I'm not gonna think about that $150. That's basically what it is,
yeah,
right?
It's kinda crazy.
I'm not gonna think about it.
All I care about is you have $850. If you get Medicaid is saying if you give me $150,
you pass the bar.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's if you make $1,000. If you make more than that,
right?
Yeah,
I'm just using his example. Right, exactly.
I mean, you know, to get to $850, I mean, nobody makes $1,000 these days anymore.
Right.
But you have to remember what's really important here is, and most people don't understand it, there is no penalty for transferring assets to become eligible for non-institutional Medicaid.
Is there a time window, or you can just, she's got to give
40.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, like the savings.
40,000 away.
Incoming.
She has to bring her income, her savings down to 20,000.
Well, a pension cannot be, a pension is a pension.
A pension is a pension. It's income, yeah. Not savings.
No. But if she has $40,000 to give away, does she have to do it, like, 3 years before she applies for Medicaid?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. Thank you for allowing me to underscore it. She transfers this month. She impoverishes herself this month. Technically, she's eligible this next month for Medicaid, home care, etc.
I have a question.
There is no waiting. Technically, there is no waiting in real life. There is waiting. It could be 3-4 months before the application is filed and service is procured.
So the transfer of savings can be made in any form, and I can, let's say I'm taking my dad's savings, his excess savings, and I'm putting it into, I can put it into a trust account.
He's giving you what he's got, 40,000, 400,000, 4 million.
Right.
He's impoverished. He's eligible next month.
Is there any tax?
What you can do for
with the money
is your affair.
Is there any tax penalty?
There
transfer?
Is no tax. No tax except an estate or gift tax. But she has to, Mary has to give away more than $5 million before she files that estate gift tax, and will have to pay a tax.
Okay.
Most of our people filing for Medicaid are not going for Medicaid. It does not make any sense,
right,
as you can imagine.
I have a question.
Yes.
To qualify for this community Medicaid, let's say the person has Medicare, and you can apply for this community Medicaid. If you have Medicare plus a secondary insurance, can you still apply?
Yes. Mary could have Medicare, she could have a Medicare supplement, mm-hmm. and she can, what else?
And
she gets Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She can utilize Medicare supplement, and then...
And you will not lose the supplement. One does not lose the Medicare supplement and applying for Medicaid.
No, one is paying out of pocket. Mary, if she has Medicare supplement, is paying $200 a month for it or more. She can use her Medicare supplement for which she's paying each month. Considerable amount of money if it's a good policy. And she gets her Medicaid as well. So she's called a dual eligible. She's Medicaid, she's Medicare.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Forget about that supplement makes her really almost triple.
Mm-hmm. But you're also paying for Medicare Part B, right? That comes out of your income.
Your Medicare Part B is coming out of your
income.
Your income.
I just have a question. I also have two cancers and all that, okay? So
say that again.
I said I'm also very sick, so I may pass away before my husband, even though I'm 23 years younger, I'm 67, I had 2 lung cancer, I'm okay, but God knows. So my question is, it's a very tricky situation, you know, because he's 90 years old, he may ultimately need all that home care and everything. Let's assume he accepts, because it's not for sure, to transfer his assets on my name, and then I pass away, and he's impoverished. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. You die and you don't want to leave him too much money.
No, no.
Because he won't qualify.
No, I know that my son is actually, we have done the papers that our son is responsible for anything. But what I'm saying, if I decide to get him the Medicaid care and I get him impoverished, I transfer his assets, which he has quite a bit, on my name, and then, bang, I pass away. That money, well, he will inherit the money automatically, being my spouse, right?
That's right. He will be entitled to one-third of your probatable estate. Mm-hmm. But we will write his will. We will write your will that says, if I predecease my husband, I want my son as executor, as trustee, to create a supplemental needs trust for my husband, putting in the minimum amount that must be put into a trust. Mm-hmm. In other words, you die, mm-hmm. your husband is not going to get all your money. Mm-hmm. He's only going to get one-third of your money. Mm-hmm. And that one-third will go into a supplemental needs trust. The money in that will be used to pay whatever bills mm-hmm. he needs paid.
Yeah.
But the rest, two-thirds of your estate, will go out to your son, your daughter. So we can make provisions. Mm-hmm. To secure your savings, which we had to load his portfolio because we had to impoverish him to get home care. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You all follow mm-hmm. the games we're playing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, scenario number two: you go home and you have a neighbor, John, and you say to John, "You know, John, I just found out today there is a penalty period for transferring assets." Eligible for Medicaid. It's not so difficult to become eligible for Medicaid, and the eligibility requirements are fairly liberal. Why don't you, John, join the Medicaid program? You haven't been looking well to me these last many months. And he says, thank you very much for thinking of me. What's funny?
He might say, do I look that bad?
Well, I'm glad you're laughing. Most people sit here and cry, so you're way ahead. All right. So John says, thank you very much. I've already tried to get into the Medicaid program, and it doesn't work for me. And you say, John, what's your situation? And John says, he has no savings. But John has $2,000 a month in income. He has $2,000 a month in income. He said, when I went to Medicaid, they said, John, you, to be eligible for Medicaid, you can't have more than $850 a month in savings, in income. And John, your Medicaid insists that you have no more than $850 a month, and all your excess income of $1,150 has to go to Medicaid if you want Medicaid home care. And he says, I can't live on $2,000 a month. I didn't tell you this. Because my rent, he says, is $1,000 a month. Do you follow? He has no savings. His rent is $2,000 a month. He cannot give into the Medicaid program. Keep $850. And given to the Medicaid program $1,150. It just doesn't work. I can't go into the Medicaid program.
So in other words, Medicaid is saying you have to live on $850. All your expenses but your medical.
No more. There's something called the pooled income trust. Now let me just explain this to you. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's just Medicaid's rule. Medicaid says, John has two choices. He can, if he wants Medicaid home care, he can either give Medicaid each month $1,150 in excess income and qualify, or he can join the pooled income trust managed by a nonprofit agency. Each month, he keeps the $850 in his pocket and sends the $1,150 into the pooled income trust managed by this nonprofit agency. Each month, the pooled income trust takes out approximately $150 a month in service fee. I'm sorry, no, that's all wrong. Each month, he takes out $1,150 and he sends it into the pooled trust. He's living on ostensibly $850 and putting the excess
into the trust.
You all follow it better than I follow it. John puts in $1,150 into that pooled income trust. He can't go into the pooled trust and use the money in the pooled trust. However, the pooled trust can pay his bills each month up to $1,000. They're taking out $150 service fee, leaving him with $850 in his pocket and $1,000 in the pooled trust. He can't use that money for anything but himself. He tells them each month what he wants them to pay, and it could be a credit card, it could be part of the rent, could be, but it can't be for his girlfriend.
Groceries only?
Groceries for him, yes. Credit cards for him, yes. But if they see on the credit card that he bought her a sweater in Bloomingdale's, that is a no-no.
So anything spent on yourself, on John?
Is fine.
Even if he wants to buy a lawnmower or something?
Well, not if he has an apartment around the
corner. Why does he need a lawnmower?
Because he's giving it to his son-in-law. No. But they ask, why is this man who lives in an apartment?
Okay.
And they do look at it. Yes?
I have another question. Our situation is he has about $2,000 in income? Mm-hmm. He has about $2,000 in income. He has about $50,000 in savings. Plus, he owns a home.
Well, we have scenario number three, and you can ask that question. So, scenario number one, no matter how much money this woman has in savings, we can impoverish her and make her eligible for Medicaid. In the second scenario, no matter how much income John has, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, he just keeps $850, sends the excess savings into the pool trust, and qualifies for Medicaid. The newsletter you have has, The newsletter you have has an article. Page two on the pooled income trust. It's just a brief article, but I think it's a good summary of what the pooled income trust is. Yes, sir.
Out of the pooled income trust, how are those bills paid exactly?
They pay it. The pooled income trust pays the bill.
But do we have to call them and say, okay, this month I have to buy this?
The law firm or the individual himself helps the family join, or the individual joins the pooled income trust.
Right.
And your question?
How are the bills paid exactly?
It's an order. Your sister, your brother, whomever, your wife, orders. She says, I want you to pay each month $1,000 to the rent, or $500 to your credit card. It's ordered. But you have to give them 2 weeks, 2 months advance, whatever.
If it's a variable payment?
Well, that's awkward, and that's a nuisance, and you'd rather not do a variable payment.
Yeah.
If you can avoid it, you'd like it to be cut and dry, a level payment. Because you're going to be burdened down, and it won't work. There'll be missing months.
And the service fee is fixed.
The service fee is fixed, yes.
How many of these pool trusts are there?
In the state of New York, it probably varies month to month, but there are probably a half a dozen to a dozen.
And they're regulated by the state?
And they're regulated by the state, yes.
What was
by
this?
Medicaid.
Oh, by
who's
Medicaid.
Who's looking over their shoulder.
Uh-huh.
A private person can't set up a pooled income.
In a situation, in John's situation, where his income is $2,000, let's say his income was $4,000. There, the nonprofit agency is only allowed to pay bills up to $1,000.
No. The nonprofit agency can pay bills of $5,000 a month, $6,000 a month.
So I don't know.
He has $4,000. He's going to keep $850.
Right.
And send the difference between $850 and $4,000
for the room,
for the pool trust.
Right.
And the pool trust is going to send roughly, is going to pay bills each month up to $3,000.
$3,000, okay.
Up to $3,000, $3,000
because that's
max.
The difference.
No max.
Right,
no
but
max.
Let's
no
say
max.
His bills.
There's no max. Time.
Okay.
There's no max.
Right, but let's say his bills are $2,000. What happens to that extra
money? Stays in the pooled income trust.
But not dedicated for him.
Dedicated for him.
Okay.
By the month, he puts it in now, and he doesn't spend. He puts in $4,000, but doesn't spend it. For months.
Right.
Okay. Puts in, it's not a savings bank. It won't collect interest.
Right.
And he can use it 6 months from now, 7 months from now. It's available to him.
Okay.
However, if he dies with money in the pool trust,
right,
it stays in the pool trust.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so for instance,
but they're not making that much money. It's a labor intensive organ trial and error. And they're not waiting for the applicant recipient to die. They're not waiting for them to die. Most of our people need their money each month. They're not that affluent.
Right.
We have occasionally someone with $5,000-$6,000 in income, but not that many.
Yeah. Is the pool trust allowed to do something with the client's money?
No.
It's really, I'm sure they do something, but it's a very conservative investment.
And
the fund that we use, let me just finish the point. The fund that we use is managed by NYSARC, NYSARC. NYSARC has been in business for a long, long time. It stands for New York State Association for Retarded Children. And it has housing, and what did you say?
I'm waiting to hear what you're going to say so I can ask you another question.
Okay. They have employment opportunities for retarded, mostly adults, retarded.
You're saying retarded or retired?
Retarded
children.
New York State Association for Retarded Children. It's really adults who are, for whom we have the pooled income trust, because they're working and they're making a little bit above the $850 a month. So this is to accommodate them initially. When the law became more, when under the law we're able to use the pool trust for all disabled people in New York State, we're using it for all people, and they are now included. My clients with Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, etc., are now included with those retarded adults.
So when John needs to go food shopping, how does he get his money?
He goes, basically, the easy way to do it, or if he has a name, they go with a credit card.
Okay.
I mean, you can use credit card now with the taxis. Right. So you can use credit cards at Food Emporium or Whole Foods.
I'm confused, but if it's coming from a fund, how do you use his credit card?
Yeah.
If the money...
His credit card says John Smith. So John Smith has incurred... No, it's a good question.
Oh, they give you a credit card?
No.
The fund?
No. You have like an Amex at the end of the month. You say, this is what my bill is, and you let them know, and they pay that.
Got it. Okay, got it.
You send John or his aide or his advocate sends the credit card bill to NYSARC, and they pay the bill.
Would a debit or an ATM card work the same way?
mean, I guess I'm not sure if they're prepared to do debit.
No, yeah. Because my dad doesn't use credit cards. He doesn't use credit cards. Everything's paid through a debit card. So if my sister's going to buy him groceries and she uses his debit card, we send that at the end of the month, you know, outline and list?
It's possible. You know, you could shop it around. If indeed NYSARC wouldn't do it, we would call other trusts to see if they would do it.
It could be automated.
But there may be a way of them. I'm sure there has to be a way.
It's probably
going to be a nuisance, but we could do it. I mean,
it'll be basically the same thing, except it's not a credit card. I would give you a statement of the monthly whatever expenses I use for. You see, my thing is, for variables, like, he pays oil heat. So every month, his oil heat bill is different. His food bill is different.
But we could send a flat rate.
Right.
You know,
so then you might get a credit or something.
Right, right.
Yeah, worse we want, we'd rather have a credit.
Right. You can even it out over the months, over the winter months, like, for instance, oil heat.
You could figure that out.
Yeah, you could figure that out.
And I have a question, is going back to that banked money that's dedicated for John. Are there reports, or how does the proxy know how much John has available to them?
You know, I haven't done it for so long myself, but the pooled income trust fund probably sends a statement every month.
That
something I would imagine happens. I haven't done it. My paralegal does it. So.
Okay.
Are we ready for scenario number 3?
Can I ask a question about
something I read in Money Magazine a few months ago? If you have a spouse, the spouse gets to keep her income or his income. But one option, in addition to liquidating investments, is buying a Medicaid-compliant annuity. Is that something that's going to come up, or is that
the Medicaid-compliant annuity, I have no idea what it is.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's a different state.
You have to be careful, because it could be available in New York, but the language is different.
It could be called a different
thing. Yeah, say it again, what is it?
It's Medicaid-compliant annuity, similar to an immediate annuity.
No, I don't know what it is, I'm sorry.
Okay, that's fine. I didn't know whether, I thought maybe it was the same as this pooled trust, but I
don't
guess not.
Think so, okay. No, I don't.
Okay, thank you.
You agree, isn't
it? Just by its definition, an annuity and a trust are two different things.
Right.
Oh, yes.
Let me do scenario number 3. Daughter gives me a call. Mother still has that $60,000. We're starting afresh. She has $60,000 in savings and $1,000 a month in income. And she's had a more serious incident, a more serious stroke, and she's going to need nursing home coverage. The nursing home is going to be $10,000 a month. And daughter says to me, Mr. Petrov, if my mother goes into a nursing home at the rate of $10,000 a month, within 6 months, she's going to spend down her $60,000. And at that point, she may be able to come home after so many months in a nursing home. Let's assume she spends down to nothing. She comes home to home care, no problem with that. She comes home with home care. Well, that is a bit of a problem, but she can manage. But she basically, she spends down her $60,000. She can't supplement her monthly income of $1,000 a month. Do you follow what just happened? She's going to go into the nursing home and perhaps spend down that $60,000. Daughter was using the $60,000, or mother was using the $60,000 to supplement her needs in the community. Now she can't use the $60,000 to supplement her needs. What to do? To be eligible for Medicaid in the nursing home, mother can't have more than $14,850 in savings, and all of her income but $50 a month goes toward her stay in the nursing home. What are we going to do? She has to be impoverished. You all follow? I'm making that clear. She has to be impoverished. She's in the nursing home. She spends down in the nursing home. She's no longer financially viable. Daughter takes matters into her own hands. She's not very patient about transferring money and so forth. She doesn't come to my lecture like you guys have come to my lecture today. And she gives away to herself her mother's $60,000. She impoverishes mother, and mother goes to the nursing home. Mother knocks on the nursing home door. Do you follow what just happened? She, daughter, wants to impoverish mother. So she's taken mother's $60,000 minus $20,000. So she's taken $40,000. She's transferred $40,000 away. Mother goes to the nursing home door. She knocks on the nursing home door. And the nursing home says, "What do you want, Mary?" Mary says, "I've transferred money." Mother says, "I have no money. I'm eligible for Medicaid." But Medicaid explains to her, or the social service director at the nursing home, explains to her that mother just transferred $40,000 at the nursing home door, or shortly before reaching the nursing home. At that point, when mother transfers $40,000 for nursing home, not for home care, but for nursing home, mother incurred a planning penalty or a Medicaid penalty of 4 months, during which time Medicaid won't pay for her in the nursing home. You haven't followed yet.
No,
we transferred $40,000 to impoverish mother, but that transfer incurred a penalty of 4 months, during which time Medicaid won't pay for her in the nursing home. How do we get 4 months? We take the average cost of a nursing home, $10,000 a month, divide the $10,000 into $40,000, and we have a 4 month penalty, during which time Medicaid won't pay for mother in the nursing home, and mother doesn't qualify in any other way.
But if daughter had done that, I say 6 months before the incident would have been okay.
Daughter would have to have done that 5 years.
Wow.
That is the five-year look back. Medicaid is going to look back. There is no look back for home care. There is no look back for the pooled income trust. There's only a 5-year look back. They look back and they see that last month, daughter transferred $40,000. That is a penalty transfer, $10,000 into $40,000. Do you all follow?
Yes.
So what is daughter going to do?
I'll see you.
I'll tell you what she can do. Excuse me, Mac. Where did I get this?
There's allergy season happening.
Is it?
Yeah.
Happening.
But you're at sign. I will take care of you.
Yeah, right.
Thank you. What we're going to do is the rule of halves. Mary is going to keep 20 of that 40,000. And she's going to transfer the other 20,000 to daughter Jean. Mary, our client, has 40,000. She's going to do what we call the rule of halves. She's going to transfer half to her daughter Jean, and she's going to keep the other 20,000 in her pocket. For the next 2 months, she's going to use the $20,000 in her pocket. 1 month, $10,000, another month, $10,000. She's going to use the $20,000 to live through the penalty. What have we accomplished? Daughter, after 2 months, is now Medicaid eligible. Medicaid will pay for her in the nursing home. If Mary can come out of the nursing home, she's Medicaid eligible within 2 months. She's going to live through it, live through the Medicaid nursing home visit in 2 months. Daughter is holding mother's $20,000. That money can be used. When mother comes home, daughter can use the $20,000 that she segregated or did a half loaf. She can use the money to pay mother's bills. The point is that going into the nursing home, mother doesn't have to spend down her $40,000. She can do something called the rule of halves. It's sometimes not exactly the rule of halves. Sometimes it's a little better, sometimes it's a little less attractive. But the rules and summary are much more sympathetic than people out there know. There's no penalty for transferring assets for home care, daycare, assisted living. No penalty for transferring assets to become eligible for Medicaid, home care, daycare. And most of us are looking, most of our families are looking for home care. No one wants to go into a nursing home, but someone wants to have their home care fees supplemented. Mm-hmm. So this is an option.
Why have the rules for nursing home been segregated like that?
Because it's more expensive for the government. And on the other side, the government wants to encourage people to stay at home, and everyone wants to stay at home. They're sometimes the spouse, the well spouse, who may be, as you describe it, a 90-year-old husband, an 80-year-old wife, maybe it's too much for the live-at-home wife, and she wants husband to go into the nursing home. But most families want to stay in the community, and the liberal rule, no penalty for transferring assets, allow people to stretch their dollars. Your father is going into the nursing home. Your father is going to get home care. We want to make it easy for him to stay home. We want to make it viable for him to stay home. We don't want him to spend down. If he spends down, he has to go into the nursing home. Number two, we address the issue of resources. Get rid of them, we're eligible. What about income?
Yes.
We join the pool trust. No matter how much income the client has, the recipient has, we can make it work. I've had clients with $5,000 a month in home care, on the home care side of the pool trust, no problem. And lastly, even if I'm in a nursing home, paying privately, if I have $10,000, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, how much am I liable for? Roughly 50%. Even at the nursing home door, the recipient, applicant, whatever, for Medicaid, I don't have to spend down. Now, I'm oversimplifying so much of it. But those three rules, yes, there's a 5-year look back for nursing home, but not a 5-year penalty.
Right?
If I've only transferred $40,000 or $20,000, there's a 4-month penalty, a 2-month penalty, whatever. A 5-year look back. Any questions? Don't do this yourselves. You asked about a home.
Well, our issue is there's also an asset, a huge asset. It's a 2-family home.
Okay.
So,
do any of the children live in that same house?
Yes, an adult son.
An adult son lives in that house. Mm-hmm. Then that, if no one lived there, if it was just mother's or dad's house, mm-hmm. He could transfer it, but he has to wait 5 years before that transfer disappears.
Right. Yeah, we just saw in the terms the same problem. I mean, we share a co-op on very expensive, but it's on both our name. So what do we do? Should it be only on my name?
I won't say. It's too, there's too much at stake, too much, you know, every situation is different. What I wanted to say in this case, if there's a live-in child and a live-in adult child, then that asset can be transferred to that adult live-in child.
Can it only be transferred to the live-in child?
That's right.
That's an issue. That's an issue. Okay.
But it's a gift from God himself. Of course, we can transfer the house to son without a penalty for transfers of assets.
Yeah, but it will become as a deduction as what inheritance.
Well, there are all kinds
of things. If it's a $5 million asset, then the kid, you know, would be paying lots of taxes, you know, on his inheritance.
Well, there's all sorts of
things.
No doubt. But the basic rule is transfer to live-in son, no penalty.
Right. That's only if we were considering putting him in a nursing home. We want to keep him in the home.
Right, but hopefully the son doesn't die before the father.
Right. Okay, understood.
Because if the son gets the house, he then can transfer it to his sisters, his brother.
Right.
Hopefully there's no
animosity.
Brotherly and sisterly.
Yeah, I understand.
Give me a call if you have a question.
I'm confused.
You're confused?
Yes.
So am I, so often.
This is for nursing home only.
Right.
So the daughter, the first thing when the daughter had the $40,000, she transferred it to herself. And then the mother went to the nursing home. And they said, no, there's a 5-year look back.
And a penalty during that 5 years with mother transferred the transferred money. She incurs a penalty of so many months. Going back 5 years, they're looking to see if she made any transfers during the last 5 years. That's one issue, the 5-year look back. The second issue is, how much did she transfer? How much did she transfer during the last 5 years? Two aspects of the nursing home eligibility.
Okay, so say, so mother's knocking at the door, and they said, no, this has happened, you're going to get a look back period, and you're going to get a penalty, right?
Right.
And then the door says, well, what about the rule of halves? That's where I'm getting confused.
Okay, so we had a $40,000 transfer, which meant a 4-month penalty. Take the average cost of a nursing home in New York City, $10,000, divide it into $40,000.
Right.
And you get a 4-month penalty.
Right.
But if Mary, our client, kept $20,000 and gave the other $20,000, she would have incurred a 2-month penalty.
Right.
But she'd have money in her pocket to live through the 2-month penalty. It's tricky. It's sometimes very hard to keep
if the, if the transfer has already happened, let's say you thought, I should transfer all my mother's assets to me, the daughter, and now you're applying for nursing home, they're going to look back 5 years. You can't do the rule of halves now because you've already transferred the money.
Well, maybe you could get it back,
well, you
daughter.
You can't get it back?
Your daughter...
she could give it back to you and then you could transfer it back?
Medicaid allows you to give it back.
Still, that's even better. Okay.
But usually you have to be careful. That daughter has spent mama's money, not on mama.
Yeah.
If she spent it on mama, that would be a return.
Okay, so it's good.
But
good
we have to tell a family member when money is transferred to qualify for Medicaid home care, that money, that $40,000 or whatever, has to be retained. We don't want it to disappear because if mother ever needs nursing home, we're in trouble.
Right. And once again, it doesn't matter where it's retained or it can be a money market, it can be a CD, it can be a savings account.
I would recommend it be something very liquid. Because mother is 88
and we never know when we're
with
gonna
Alzheimer's.
Need it. So
we don't know what's going on. we have to protect a backup. We have to, yeah, give away money for home care, but
have it available.
Have it available. Okay. We can use it, but we have to be able to, we can use it for mother, but we have to be able to document it.
Of course. It's like you had to buy her, let's say, a medical bed, an $800 medical bed.
You could.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Or you need to buy her a bathrobe.
Right. Okay. Just as long as it's for mother.
I have two questions. The first one is, when you first started the presentation, you mentioned the healthcare directors, you know, power of attorney, the proxy. Do those documents get outdated if they were signed and said
you want? They could get outdated. You can name someone who you no longer, mother can name someone on either document that she know that's no longer available. She names three daughters. We have three daughters here, three daughters, whatever. And one of them moves away, or two of them move away. They move to Florida, whatever. I mean, we should look periodically at it. What that means is every year, every 3 years, look at these documents, and wills, of course, too, need to be adjusted sometimes.
Right.
And the law changes, or the family situation changes.
I need to go meet my sister for lunch, and she said to take good notes, but she lives in New Jersey. Should I not tell her this stuff?
Don't waste your time.
Yeah.
Okay.
You've got to go to a New Jersey elder board.
Just a question.
Thank you very much.
Between spouses.
Oh, excuse me. This hasn't been a complete waste of time. Because you want to
use... I'm a New York State resident.
Yeah. Right.
So.
But if we're talking to your sister from New Jersey, you want her to go through this New York checklist. Think of this as a checklist. Because New Jersey won't have all of this. New Jersey is not nearly as generous in how it's done.
Oh,
but
dear.
This would be an ideal checklist against which you could compare New York with New Jersey.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Sorry.
No, don't impoverish my husband's asset. What happens to the girl we own in both names?
Nothing, but you now own the co-op, and what happens if you die, and so forth, and so on, how much money do you have?
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about if I want Medicaid for my husband,
you can
and I want to impoverish him,
yes.
What do I do with the co-op?
We can leave the co-op in his name, jointly with you.
That's what it is now.
You can
so
leave
is that too much of an asset?
It's not. It's an exempt asset. If it's worth whatever it's worth, it's not countable. It's an exempt asset.
Why?
That's the way it is. That's the law.
Oh, so real estate does not count.
It is on threshold.
It does. It does count.
Mm-hmm.
If your husband were living alone, you were not there.
Uh-huh.
He could not have a house or apartment worth more than $850.
Mm-hmm. But now it's okay because I live with
him. Well, nothing's okay. You sound like you have perhaps too much in assets.
We have a lot of assets, yes.
Then you probably shouldn't be doing what we're talking about.
So I'm just going to impoverish myself to take care of my husband, $10,000.
Yeah, I mean, that's a problem.
And that's life, right?
Yeah. But you have to remember, whatever you pay for your husband in care is a tax-deductible medical expense.
Uh-huh, right, yeah.
Can't
so there's no way to get
it. Well, I don't know how much money you have, and I don't know where it's at.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So we'd have to sit down and figure it out.
Okay.
It's nothing that you can do just... Here.
Well, like I was saying, the pension, and then, you know, so in order to get $850, we'd have to give so much money to that fund, that seems to be ridiculous. So that's why I'm having trouble to, so.
It may not work.
It may not
work. It doesn't work for a
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm still trying to get this nursing home thing. Okay, so I understand the daughter transfers $40,000 within 5 years, and.
It's a penalty.
It's a penalty, okay. But say there's no transfer at all. If there's no transfer and mother knocks on the door, then the rule of halves is implemented?
Well, say that again. If mother knocks on the door, of the nursing home and says I have $40,000 and does nothing about it, and she's in the nursing home, she's going to spend down that $40,000, and that's the end of the story.
She gets Medicaid, and then it's covered by Medicaid. Then the nursing home helps her apply for Medicaid, and she gets Medicaid.
But if you come to my office, we will be able to conserve approximately 50% of whatever she's got in the bank before she walks into the
Before she knocks on the door, even. You have to do it before you knock on the door.
Right? Well, no. She could do it after she knocks on the door, too.
So if it's medically necessary for her to go in, she can enter the nursing home, then all of this can take place afterwards.
That's well, right. Medicare, not Medicaid. Medicare, if she needs to go into a nursing home for medical reasons, and it's a medical discharge to the nursing home, Medicare will cover
100 days,
90 days, something like that. Covers the first 90 days or 100 days, and then she will either have to pay for it privately, right, or apply for Medicaid. And if she applies for Medicaid, then it's what he's talking about. They look at her assets, they look at if she's transferred money over the last 5 years, that look back period, and if she's eligible for Medicaid, great, she'll apply for Medicaid for her, and that's fine. If she has resources and assets and she still needs to pay for the nursing home, then it gets into what he's been talking about.
You can
about.
Do the rule of halves?
Yeah, depending on how much we're talking about, yeah.
But does Medicare know about the rule of halves?
Medicaid.
They know the system, yeah.
And just explain in 25 words or less what the rule of halves is, what's the rule?
It means that if my mother is going to the nursing home today, she has $100,000. She's going to be a nursing home patient. How she has to be impoverished to qualify for Medicaid. How can she do this? In the use of the rule of halves, she gives away $50,000 to me, her trusted son. And she uses the remaining $50,000 to pay for my mother's care in the nursing home for the next 5 months.
Privately.
And then she can apply for Medicaid that will cover the cost.
But she will have
half
in her pocket and half in the nursing home.
Or half with her son. Not in her name. Because if it's in her name, she's not qualified.
Correct.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's complicated.
How to save half of
exactly.
It's hard. It's not only complicated, it's hard to sort of get into the feel of it.
Yeah.
You know, too. It's an unreal game.
There's so many. And everybody's story is very different, and the situation is very different.
Is this elder care something new within the law industry?
No.
Well, what's new is there is a body of law. There really is a body of law, and it's complicated. There's how do you get Medicaid services? You have to apply. There's laws about how do you apply for Medicaid, and then what are the implications for applying for Medicaid, and what are we applying for, home care, daycare, nursing home?
What is daycare?
Daycare means mother lives at home, but she joins a program that's like
So basically, it's for generally for people who are either frail, elderly, or people with memory problems.
Thank you.
And they provide a number of hours of supervised care for that person. So instead of getting help at home with a home health aide, the person can go to a day program that's designed and protected and supervised for their care needs. And if it's a medical model, which is covered under Medicaid, they can get, you know, pills, they can get wound dressing, they can get assistance with dialysis, all this stuff, medical.
Doctor checks their records.
It's supervised by nurses. It's got a medical component to it. And so Medicaid covers that. So instead of a home health aide at home, they could go to a day program and they would get socialization and activities and such at the center, and then go home at the end of the day to the house.
It works for very well for many people.
For a lot of people, it's great, but it's covered under Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Medicare doesn't pay for that. Okay, so it's either private pay or Medicaid. And it's usually geared to people who are more advanced in their memory problems and their dementia. They need a lot more care. They might need bathing and helping and supervising and dressing. Yeah, a little more isolated, and they need the socialization.
And it's one-on-one care at these daycare centers?
No, it's a program, so it's group. So it's like lots of people who have memory problems come into a program. They do memory exercises. They listen to music. They do some activities. They have discussion. They do exercise. They have meals. Mm. And that's geared to that population. And so it's social, too, which is nice. So there's aides that are there and staff that's there, specially trained to work with this population, so they're safe and supervised. But when they go home, when they have transportation home also and to the facility. So it's a nice respite for families. Mm-hmm. It's great supervised care and socialization and cognitive stimulation for the person. And then they're escorted home. So it's covering under Medicaid also.
So a doctor says that this patient of mine is eligible for this kind of...
The doctor doesn't have to say. If you think that person could benefit from it, you can just call up the facility and say, or the day program, and say, I'd like to have my mom come for an interview, and then they work with you to set that up.
Is there a website, a directory of those facilities in New York City?
If we're dealing with someone who has a dementia, a memory problem, yeah. If you will either talk to your social worker who's working with your families who are part of Martha Stewart, and they can help direct you to the facility that's in your neighborhood mm-hmm. or appropriate for your family member. But if you want to go on the website, you can go to the one in Manhattan. It's a little confusing, but the Alzheimer's Association, who changed their name and they separated from the main national office. Anyway, the New York City chapter, if you go to their website, it's called caringkind.org.
Caring?
CaringKind.
Yes.
All one word, .org. Yep. And then you look under day programs mm-hmm. or services, and then they have day programs, and it has all the list in all the five boroughs.
Okay, very good.
But I would also talk to the family, to your social workers here, because they know your family.
We just have a doctor.
Every doctor at the Martha Stewart practice has a social worker. Mm-hmm. That works with that doctor.
Or social inquiries or this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question as far as like timeline in the scope of these illnesses that we're dealing with. Ideally, when should we start looking or considering these options?
Depends what the illness we're dealing with, actually.
Alzheimer's.
Are we dealing with an Alzheimer's kind of diagnosis? I'm Elizabeth Fine. I'm a social worker here, too. Sorry, just so you know where I'm coming from. I think that's a really good question, and I think there isn't always a clear answer on it. I think why we have these lectures is so that you have the information. If someone is at the mild stage of dementia like Alzheimer's, probably this is a really good time to think about starting to put the affairs in order because of this potential decline that someone will probably have at some point. How fast, how slow, and when they'll need that help, nobody knows. You know, but if you're seeing that someone is starting to have more and more difficulty, the odds are that probably at some point they'll either need home care and to have someone's assets set up in a way that they can apply for home care sooner rather than later. Probably that's one of the best things people tell me they've done. They've had their financial affairs of that person in order, and now they can devote their energy to making sure quality of life is good and you spend and do things knowing you've got the finances as best under control as you can. So I don't think it's ever too early, especially if you know someone has that kind of diagnosis, because unfortunately, but fortunately in a way, we know sort of the trajectory of it. How fast, we don't know. So knowing that, like anything, you want to be able to prepare. Like you prepare a child to go to pay for college, this is preparing someone to be able to pay for the care they might need. I know it's like a bad analogy, but it's a good analogy. And it's a peace of mind in a way, knowing that that part of it's sort of taken care of. Because it's not that clear cut, and it takes time to get it organized. And better now when things aren't so stressful, you know, that you can think clearly, the family can work together and figure out a plan that works, and it's great you're all here to do that. And then the person, too, can be part of the planning as much as they can, and you can know what they want to do and what their their thoughts are and their plans are for themselves, so you can best take care of that for them.
Does that answer that okay?
Beautiful.
Would you say that the first step is reaching out to, like, an elder law firm?
I think this is a very good first step.
This is the first step. And then you might need to hear this a couple times, because it's complicated.
Yeah.
But I think that's important to do. While that person is still able to make decisions and give you power of attorney and stuff like that, too.
If we didn't have a live-in son or daughter, we could take advantage, perhaps, in your family, of the 5 years.
Yeah.
Transfer the house now,
yeah.
And hopefully mother or brother or aunt or uncle lives through the 5-year penalty.
He lives through the next 20-year penalty.
You know, when our situation was, our mother died, and when that happened, I tried to get my father to put the house in a trust, or to move the assets out of his name.
Yeah.
And he's old school, he wouldn't do it. He thought we were trying to take the house away.
Yeah, my husband is the same way. Yeah.
So, unfortunately, over the last 10 years, the house has remained in his name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we have a will, and we have a health proxy, right? So we're kind of there, but we have to keep on working on it.
So, good luck to you all.
Yeah.
Thank you.
How often do you come here?
Question. I'm still trying to get the rule of halves.
It's November. We're coming back. November 16th.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your mother worked out.
Thank you.
For the rule of halves.
Take care.
This has been wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Very informative. Appreciate it very much. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Those assets are only to be used for your mother, right? Those assets that you transferred, the 50% of your mother's assets that you transferred, are only supposed
Thank
to be used for her.
Go start now.
Yeah, you're doing this for her. Yeah, I don't understand the question.
Well,
the rule of halves would only be for her going into a nursing home. It's her money. We want to facilitate her entry into the nursing home. We want to maintain some of her money. We don't want her to spend it all down. We can conserve roughly half.
Okay. So she's in the nursing home. What am I spending the other half of her money on?
Well, you're going to keep the other half in your pocket and use it to make mother's stay in the nursing home more comfortable for her.
Okay.
Pay for her aid, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
Pay for a private duty aid, so many hours a day, whatever like that.
And is there some legal document for the transfer? I don't understand.
Well, hopefully daughter has power of attorney.
So you just transfer
you, the daughter, will be able to transfer money from mother to yourself.
So just write a check to my account? That's it? There's no legal document or anything?
No, not necessarily.
I want to see how the power gets around.
But
always a pleasure.
Yes, I'm sorry. Thank you for your
time. I'm sorry it was late.
No problem.
Thank you. It was very informative. We'll see you soon again.
I wish you well.
I met you about 10 years ago, and you were just as handsome as you are.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Where was it?
It was at Columbia University for the organization the Institute of Hispanic Elderlies.
Huh, at Columbia? You sure it was? Were you an employee?
I had just retired, so it was about 10 years ago.
It was, I didn't remember Hispanic, I thought it was for employees at Columbia.